This week, I would actually like us have I would like to have us take some time during the program, during the phone conversation, to do a little practice and then discuss that practice. But as in the past when we've done that, we'll just do very short practice sessions of about 2 minutes and then see how people respond to them. We'll do that at least once during the phone call, and if we have time, twice. So let's go to the reading, top of page 148. So there's this very fundamental point about time. And let me say that there are parts of the reading for this week that I think are really pretty challenging. I think the basic point is not so difficult to communicate, and it's very wonderful and liberating. So let's investigate it. So the point that's made at the top of page 148 in the first full paragraph says that the time expresses a world in which objects and entities have identities, are independent, interact, and are distinguishable from characterizations of them, meanings and definitions. So time makes everything happen. That's a kind of a simple way of saying it. Time makes everything happen. And in a very real sense, we can say that time is the creator of our experience. Now, as soon as we say that, I think you have to stop and say, it's not the creator in the way that God is the creator. It's not some substance or thing or even actor in any usual sense that is doing the creating. It's just that there's, in order for anything to happen at all, there has to be a kind of creative force. There has to be the difference between nothing and something, if you want to put it this way. Is that for there to be something, there has to be a creative dynamic, or something would never appear. The act of appearing is a creative act. And time is that creating, is that creative force. So I was talking with someone in a different context in the last week, but something came up that I think might be helpful here. Very often, so when we say something and nothing, for instance, we're talking in kind of spatial terms. Nothing is when there's nothing there, and something is when something is there. But here we're talking in temporal terms, and it's the same basic point. Nothing happening versus something happening, but that's putting it too spatially. The fundamental point is just that there is this creative dimension to our experience, and that's what time does. It's a kind of creative force or power. And so when we look at our ordinary experience, what we are seeing, although again that is too spatial, but we're very spatial beings, or at least we, especially in seeing, we're very spatial beings. When we engage the world, maybe that's a better way to say it, we are engaging the creative dynamic of time. It's not something separate. It's not something we have to kind of discover by, by somehow turning and looking in a different direction. Our experience is the creative dynamic of time. So if that's so, if we can kind of accept that idea, at least provisionally, then the question arises, what can we what are the consequences of that? If we say, well, our ordinary experience is just excuse me, just is time, we say, okay, so what? We could kind of accept that and then go on with our lives. Well, there's a lot of answers to that question, so what? To the question, what do we do? But the first answer, really, that Rinpoche gives in this chapter is, if everything that appears is created by time, then time could also create differently. And our ordinary experience is just one possibility for that creative dimension to manifest itself, to act itself out. Or actually, the way the term Rinpoche uses is time times out our present experience. But it could time it out differently. And I suppose in a way you could think of the analogy of a drummer. You know, a drummer times out or a particular beat, a particular rhythm. But the rhythm could be completely different. And time is like that. There's a certain rhythm, and Rinpoche does talk about the rhythm of time in other places, not in our reading here. But you could say that rhythm goes together with a certain understanding of what's happening, or a certain presentation in terms of things and meanings and of course, selves and so on. And it could all be different. It could all be timed out differently. And that's really where the reading for this week starts. As he says, you know, time, he says, once we see that what the glue, I've used a more creative image, and he does it different places also, but once we see that the glue of experience is time, then we also see that time could be a bridge to other realms. And the reason for that is that, you know, everything is timed out by time. And Rinpoche talks here in this part of the reading about the relationship to space, but I'm not going to really focus on that so much. What Rinpoche says then is we could experience a completely different order, a different temporal order, because it's all up to time. You know? There's nothing that's holding it back. And so he starts talking on page one, at the bottom of page 148, that we could have these remarkable discontinuities. And in the guidance, I said, well, you know, don't worry if you haven't had some kind of really super special miraculous occurrences in your life. I suppose I can tell you, you know, sometimes there's sort of a beginner's mind approach to this. And I can tell you my one experience I had very early on with time. When I was in 1978, when I was first studying TSK, I was on a plane flight, and we've been studying the time section here, and I was on a plane, and the stewardess was serving drinks, and when she was right next to me, she spilled the drink, and this is not a big deal, but, you know, I was looking as the drink spilled, and I saw it happening backwards in time. I absolutely saw it happening backwards in time. And all I could say was, you know, that's interesting. I mean, it didn't make me feel like I had touched the secret of the universe or anything. But it was interesting, no doubt about it. And so that's maybe an example of a small discontinuity. However, as I said in the guidance, the point is not the discontinuities. The point is that the possibility is there. And the question to ask, really, the question I want to explore is why is it that that possibility is there? What is it about our situation that makes it possible to have completely different temporal orders? And the answer that Rinpoche gives here is that there are gaps, right? There are gaps and discontinuities. He says down, it's about 10 lines from the bottom of the page on 148, he says, every part of our interlocking world may be discovered to be full of gaps and discontinuities. And really, you know, so what he's saying is the reason we can have these experiences, which are non-standard experiences, is because the gaps make it possible to escape from our ordinary understanding, right? We don't have to, as he said at the top of page 149, we don't have to adhere to our usual patterns. And that could mean that there's more knowing. So the question, of course, is how do we find those gaps? And the discussion, you know, it's not, I mean, he doesn't ask that question, I'm asking that question, but he gives a kind of an answer. You know, he talks about this in a certain sense as a breakout mentality. In other words, we're in kind of imprisoned by our usual temporal order, and we want to explore the possibility that we could break out from that order. And he says, an approach to that is gaps. And he does say that gaps are only transitional. It's not as though the whole point is to find a gap. It's just that that's, if we're looking for a way to challenge our usual temporal order, the place to look is for a gap. So now we need to understand what is involved in our usual temporal order. And the answer is that he's very clear about this, that the usual temporal order is structured in terms of a past, present, future nexus, right? There is a series of moments, a cause and effect succession. And that, if you look at that, you know, he may have a series of kind of simple little diagrams starting at the bottom of page 150. And he says the ordinary view is that there's a series of moments that go from point to point, and what happens in one moment causes what happens in the next moment. And the point here is that is a sealed shut world. You know? One moment leads to the next moment, and there's no way out. That's what we want to challenge. So what we want to challenge is exactly the past, present, future causal nexus. If you have a present moment, if you have a present moment, somebody's being very noisy. Do we know who that is? No? Okay. Better now. If we're in the present moment, we know that it was caused by the past moment, and we know that it's going to lead to the next moment. And that's the causal nexus, and that seals us in, and there's no possibility for gaps. What he's suggesting is that because the present experience is given by time, we don't have to be committed to a past, present, future causal nexus. The present moment is what it is, and in the next moment, and even that's already conceding too much, as Rinpoche would say, that's already conceding too much but to the ordinary structure. But in the next moment, it could all be completely different. That causal structure is a part of what's given by time. And I think this is actually a really fundamental point, and Rinpoche gets to it later in what is a little bit more difficult part of the reading. But he's talking about the idea that everything interacts. And that's, when you say everything interacts, you tend to think in terms of things and events, maybe. But also, our whole notion of causality interacts with the rest of our experience, right? And for that matter, our whole notion of a past, present, future causal nexus. That notion, that idea, is inseparable from what we experience. So when you begin to allow for the possibility that time could manifest itself differently, no, it doesn't look very nice. When you see that time could manifest itself differently, you're not committed to that nexus, because you see that the whole notion of causality and of past, present, future and that structure is part of what time is timing out, is part of what time is presenting. And so a kind of a simple way of looking at this, and I don't think it's the final version, but it's the one that I want us to look at now, and I think it's very interesting to explore, is the one that I mentioned in the guidance. And it goes back to the previous section in the chapter, which we read last week, on page 144. And it's right here, it's on the first full paragraph on 144. He says, instead of nailing each point down within this familiar past, present, future picture, we can concentrate on attending to what is immediately present, without locating it in a before-after causal nexus. That's just what we've been talking about. And then he says, well, that just sounds like regular meditation, right? And he says, yeah, it's like regular meditation, but it doesn't so much help you, or let's put it this way, there's a problem when you try to do that, when you say, now I'm going to meditate and I want to just simply attend to the present, because your understanding of the present continues to be defined by the relationship of the present moment to the past and the future. And that's exactly what we want to let go of. Just exactly what it says here. Right? So instead of locating the present moment in a before-after causal nexus, we can just concentrate on attending to what is immediately present. That's the practice. And I'd like us to do that for a couple of minutes, and then I'd like to hear from people a little. What's actually, you know, what your experience is. I'm not completely clear how many of you are able to speak up, but I hope enough of you so we can have a little discussion about that. So, attending to the immediate present moment without locating it. So that's the actual practice. How do you attend to the present moment without locating it in the past and future causal nexus? We may not know, you know. And if we do the exercise for 2 minutes, we may not have figured it out. But if you don't try to figure it out, if you just let yourself do it, if you just allow for the possibility, then maybe something can happen. So let's sit for a couple of minutes and do that and see what happens. Okay? I'm going to turn off my video so as not to distract you. I'll come back on later. Okay, so that's our time. I'm going to try to figure out who's, somebody's giving us a little noise issue here. And I'm going to see if I can mute them. Maybe that person. Call in user two. Let me hear from you. What do you discover? Maybe you discover that this is a difficult practice. I don't know. But would anybody like to say anything about the little exercise we just did?
Hi, this is Bruce.
Yeah, hi, Bruce.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, doing that exercise, what came up for me was just when I found myself referring to a past memory or an anticipation or something, you know, I was feeling myself in that causal nexus, and then I just saw those recollections of past or future as recollections rather than being past or future. That's actually not a new idea to me, but somehow that showed up very in a new and surprising way. This time I just was taken off guard by it and seeing it as, you know, just thought. It kind of just kept centering me more deeply into whatever was unfolding, and that kind of gave me a sense of, I don't know if that's what Rinpoche is pointing at, but it felt like feeding time into time, in a sense, because it just seemed to keep centered, or recentering, where there's not really center in the past or future, but it's just kind of an unfolding that's just always there.
Okay.
I'm explaining it very well.
Yeah, no, I think that's it's a very fundamental point, and I think you did explain it well. In fact, I'm going to refrain from commenting and see if anybody else has anything to say.
This is Michael. When I found myself anticipating things in the rest of the day and tried to stop myself from doing that, something in me objected to foregoing reaching out to the future because the present seemed too small a place to live.
The present seemed too small. That's interesting. Was that a thought you had or just a sense? Did you feel kind of closed in or what?
Yeah, it's like thinking of future was going on a journey and I didn't want to stay put.
Okay. No, that's a good point. Well, yeah, I guess I'm not going to try to say anything about that either. Anybody else?
Yes, this is Arthur.
Yeah.
I try to be aware of my breathing. And so I notice if I am aware from breathing in and breathing out, I saw this is location. This is a location. So, and I stop to breathe and close my eyes and try to nearly feel nothing. No breathing, nothing for just 5 seconds or what.
Right.
And it was like a kind of zero. I felt nothing and then I moved my back. I feel the location of my back, but if I stopped breathing, it was a short moment of, it seems like nowhere or no nothing. So this was my experience.
Okay, well, that's very interesting. What you were doing was essentially a meditative practice, and Rinpoche says here that this is a meditative practice, but the difference between this practice and meditation is that the experience of the meditative moment, like the doing nothing, that 5 seconds that you described, is itself not located. Did you have that sense? not located in a past, present, future causal nexus. Did you have that sense?
Yes, for a short moment. I
Mm-hmm.
think I cannot see it more precise, but
Right.
I sense it a short moment.
Okay. Okay, good. Well, I think what people are pointing to, I mean, all those comments are useful, and it's the kind of thing one can notice in looking at this. And I recommend that you try doing this. It's obviously something you could do at any time. I think what Bruce said about the past and the future arising without, I'm not, this is not the way Bruce said it, but without claiming, without your having to accept their claim to really be the past and the future, you know. So you could say it's kind of a present experience of the past and the future. I think that's a helpful thing to keep in mind, because it's not as though you have to, it's not as though you have to get stupid about the past and the future, you know. But they don't have the same claims on you. I think I'll just leave it at that. The significance of that, I think, is really important, because, you know, what Rinpoche is saying here, remember, we started looking at this because we were looking at the possibility of really entering a gap. And if you can bring into the present moment the possibility of the past and the future, or possibly, as Arthur was saying, you can kind of let go not only of the past and the future, but of the present as well, in terms of any kind of situatedness. Both of those might be ways of not encountering that objection, Michael, that you had, but the present is so tiny, you know, I don't want to be stuck in the present. It may turn out that the present is the whole of everything, right? And that because that's so, before the next present arises, there's a gap, right? There's everything, and then there's everything. But between those two everythings, there's a gap. Bruce has a comment in the chat, which I encourage people to look at if you're online. I'll read it. He says, that's a good way to put it. The past and future thoughts weren't convincing in their pastness and futureness. Yeah, I think that is a good way to put it. I mean, I guess I said something like that, but you just did it nicely here. Okay, so that's the possibility of gaps, right? And Bruce actually mentioned the other possible exercise I was thinking we could do, which is very much related, but it gives a different dimension to it, and that's where Rinpoche talks on page 149 about feeding time into time. We're not going to do that as a practice, because I want to still say a couple more things and we're actually, formally speaking, we're out of time. But if we take a look at 149, where the last paragraph, when he's saying we have to give up our commitment to this present perspective, you know, this usual conditioning, which we try to do by seeking out gaps, even though, as he says, that's only transitional. He says, when we surrender that ordinary blinding knowing to wider perspectives, it amounts to feeding everything that is given with time back into time. And then he suggests doing that as a practice. This can be done quite deliberately, skillfully and vigorously, feeding time into time, stimulating and accelerating it, getting more resultant energy, and again putting that back into time. Now, I encourage you to try that during the week. I guess I will mention that again in the guidance that I write up. But I do want to point out that it doesn't mean, you know, when he talks about stimulating and accelerating, That's very interesting. I don't think it can mean that that you end up feeling like you're kind of the time is rushing forward, because in that case you would just get very dizzy. It would have a kind of an out of control feeling. So the stimulating and accelerating quality is it makes sense in terms of the dynamic of time, as long as you're not separate from that dynamic. In one of the TSK books, Rinpoche uses the image of trying to stop a speeding locomotive, a speeding train, and saying that's really not possible to do, but you could be just sitting comfortably inside the train. Or maybe he uses the plane, I can't remember. As you go rushing along. And I think it's more like that. If you can stimulate and accelerate the flow of time and be that flow of time, then it's not going to be disorienting or overwhelming, right? And in fact, what happens is that you end up in a temporal dimension that's timeless, right? And that's what he says on page 150. Let me see if I can find that quickly. He says, when we let go, this is on the third paragraph, he says, when we overturn our usual views, which always require an explanation, a source, or a doer, he says, time ceases to be seen as unfolding distributively. In other words, time does not move from one thing to the next. Instead, it shows great space in a perfect timeless encounter, timeless in the sense of being unconditioned and without ordinary duration. So that's another way of describing what happens if you don't situate the present moment in a past, present, future causal nexus. There isn't any duration. There isn't, it becomes timeless. Now, I'm a little nervous, I guess you could say, about using that language. I mean, for some people it may work just fine, but it sounds so counter to our ordinary experience that it may seem like it's kind of this unattainable goal way out there somewhere, and we can't possibly get there, or else we try really hard to get there. Neither one of those is a very good approach. So I suppose I just want to emphasize that the timeless nature of that kind of timing is it's available in a very natural way. It does require us to let go of our usual way of doing things, but once but that's not such a hard thing to do. We just imagine that it's difficult, but it's not so hard to let go of our ordinary way, precisely because time is always timing out another possibility, you could say. And there's actually a very important clue, I think, and it's one of it's just a single word on page 152, where I don't think I'm going to be able to find it right now because I didn't mark it. But he says that what we want to do is approach this in a disinterested way. So we're not committed. I think that's what disinterest means here. We're not committed to a particular way of being because the past, present, future causal nexus doesn't just mean that, here I am sitting at my desk, and in the next moment, because I'm sitting at my desk now, in the next moment I'm still going to be sitting at my desk. That's true. That is the past, present, future causal nexus. But it also has to do with our way of connecting to it and our very strong commitment to being a self. We know that we're a self because in the past moment we were the same self, and the next moment we're going to be a self too. So the self is also an expression of that past, present, future causal nexus. And if we can be disinterested, that's a way of letting go of the self. But it doesn't have to be a big deal way of letting go of the self. It doesn't mean that we have to take some enlightened perspective. It just means that everything that shows up that relates to the self is also to use Bruce's chat comment here, is also a not particularly convincing version of past and future. No, in Love of Knowledge, Rinpoche talks about the self being spread out across time through past and present and future, and that's what makes it a self. So if we see that spread out self in a disinterested way, if we don't identify with it, then the possibility is there for the immediate engagement with the present without locating it in the causal nexus. And another way to explore that is this practice of feeding time into time. So maybe try doing that during the week. I'm still, we haven't really talked at all ever about the practice of TSK exercise 16, but perhaps next week we can do it. But I certainly encourage you also to do these two exercises, not formal exercises, but the one on page 144 and the feeding time into time, which is on 149. We'll look at that next week.